Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Carl Mack, and this is Combat Chronicles. Got another episode for you because after I recorded episode 50, which covered UFC from this past weekend and Takaru's return at Muay Thai GP, my good mates, the French hosts of Abordurie, Luc Abordon and Baba, who have been on the podcast previously when we covered the match, long-term friends of mine, well, over 10 years now. We've been colleagues, we've written together, we've podcasted together. They hit me up and said, look, we were there, we covered the Muay Thai GP event from the presser up to the event itself. We were at the post-fight presser, we know everything that happened, and let's do a podcast in English, let's cover the whole shebang. So I said, of course, what could be better than talking to my boys about Japanese kickboxing and French kickboxing too. Unfortunately, Luca was not able to make the recording, but Baba did. We had a fantastic talk, mainly centered on the event, say from start to finish. There's two fights that we discussed in depth as well, and some really interesting tidbits about those fights also. I'll let Baba do the talking. Strap in, this is a long one, relatively long. Discussion about all sorts of stuff, all things Takaru. And if you stick round for the whole episode, we talk a lot about ONE Championship at the end. The issues of ONE Championship, potential fight between Rod Tang and Takaru. So you'll want to stay tuned for that after this. Right, so as per the intro, I'm here with Baba. He's been on the podcast before when we spoke about the match last year. We are colleagues going a long way back and friends even longer. It seems that Takaru always brings us together. So, Baba, for those that don't know you, please give yourself a very small introduction and let the listeners know what you're all about.
Yes, hi, everyone, and thank you, Carl, for having me again. I'm really happy about that. So I'm Baba, and I'm a former Muay Thai and kickboxing fighter. I'm a coach. I've been a coach for like 15 years now, something like that. But I've been a coach like permanently for like 2 years now.
And of course, you host a French language podcast about kickboxing as well.
With Luc Abordon, like everyone knows about Luc Abordon on Twitter. So this is my friend, and we have a podcast together called Au Bord du Ring, which means ringside.
And indeed, if you are a French-speaking listener and you have not signed up to that podcast, you've got to do it. I've got to tell you, once I did try to listen to it just to see if there's anything I could pick up. But it's, for someone who's stupid than myself, it's just not going to work. But as I say, Takaru brings us together. But there's, for anyone that listened to my podcast at the weekend, I did talk about a little bit about what I would describe as a fiasco. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. That's why we're here today. There was a fight card this past weekend, as I say, was covered on episode 50 of Combat Chronicles in small detail by myself, only based on hearsay on social media. Obviously, some guys that I know and trust have told me some things, but mainly it seemed that this French fight card, I believe in Paris, with Takaru and Taiju and Tiger coming over from K1, although Takaru is now free agent and Taiju's fought in Rise as well, and you know, etc. You know, basically a host of quality Japanese fighters coming over.
And it appears that, well, the English phrase is that the French could not piss organise a piss up in a brewery, that everything went wrong. It seemed that there was issues with ticketing, with ringside officials, etc. We're going to get to that in a minute. But first, Bubba, could you give the listeners a little introduction on MTGP, Muay Thai Grand Prix, this promotion? They obviously host kickboxing and Muay Thai. Are they big in France? I think maybe the listeners don't understand that kickboxing and Muay Thai in France is actually quite a big sport, whereas in most countries it isn't. Is that fair to say?
It's absolutely fair to say. Like, Muay Thai and kickboxing are very, very big, always been big for like 30 years now in France. And the MTGP is like a bit young because, but also a bit old because before that it was like one organization, then two organizations that merged together to do the MTGP, right? But that before that, they were called Duel. And before that, again, they were called simply Wicked One, like the sponsor, you know? So the promoter is actually a former teammate of mine. So we were fighting together at the same club back in the days, 20 years ago. And yeah, I don't know exactly how it came to, you know, do the MTGP with the London guy, Philippe Thieu. But anyways, they came together and they were now for like maybe 4 to 5 years. They are doing shows in France and in England also, but also in other countries, like they said. So it's been quite some time. And yeah, they're not the biggest pro organization in France. There are bigger organizations, but they are the organizations that trust young fighters. It's a very good organization for up-and-coming fighters in France, actually. So that's how people see them. If you want to see the new talent, you go to an MTGP.
That's perfect. So for a Muay Thai fan, but how many of us are actually Muay Thai fans? But it's kind of the equivalent of maybe like Omnoy Stadium, where you get like the prospects coming through. And every so often they match him against a veteran you might have heard of to see if they're ready to take that next leap. Yeah. Well, in this instance, we actually had some, you know, we had a superstar come over, which you would never get in Omnoy Stadium. That would never happen, but we had a real superstar. So you were on the ground, you were covering the event, you were very vocal on social media in terms of sharing the questions. You were at the presser, you obviously got to meet Takaru and the fighters. How was that experience? Did you learn anything about the promotion? Did you learn anything from the fighters beforehand that you think the listeners want to know? And before we get onto the issues, did any alarm bells go off for you in the presser or before the show?
Well, about the pressure and me and Lucas covering the event, I'm a former teammate of Eric, the promoter of the MTGP, but we were not specifically on, we don't talk on the regular basis. Like, we didn't talk for a while, but as soon as I heard that Takeru was fighting in France, obviously I got in touch with him and to see if I could cover the event with Luca. He wasn't aware of my podcast. That's honest, because we don't do much advertisement for the podcast actually. But he was very happy that someone with knowledge of the Japanese scene was eager to cover the event. So he gladly obliged anyway. We were very happy about that. About the pressure, well, like you've known me for quite some time now, Kyle. I don't think I'm a show off, but I will say that I was basically the only person asking questions at that presser.
It seems that way.
This is what happened, because very few people were aware that it was Takeru in the room. Like for most people, it was just a Japanese fighter that they saw on the TV sometimes, on video, YouTube sometimes. So I asked questions to the ESKR president too. He was glad that I asked questions about the belt and things like that. But at the pressure, there wasn't, you know, something wrong or anything weird, because there wasn't anything involved but the fighters, the promoters, and the other and the press. But there wasn't like press. Maybe it was like 10 people, me and Luca included. So at this stage, the only problems were, you know, the usual French problems.
Translation?
Like, a lot of fighters arriving a bit late.
Okay.
And you could see that it was maybe the Japanese crew was starting to get a bit, you know, annoyed about the French customs.
Of course, because in Japan, everything is on time.
Exactly.
Everything is on time.
So it was a bit weird, but as I was asking questions, like after that, after the pressure, the ABEMA ladies, the ABEMA lady came to me and asked for an interview. I'm still looking for the video.
I have looked for you as well. And for those that are not aware, ABEMA are I've said this before on the podcast, but they're a huge Japanese streaming site. They have Rise, One Championship, K1, and they hosted the match. And they have an exclusive deal for Takaru's fight. So they were broadcasting this in Japan. And that's important for later.
Exactly. That they were there, so they were a bit pissed, but they still interviewed me. At that stage, they were still like happy to be there and curious about the event and all of that. And you know, so at this stage, again, not really big problems.
Cool.
Nothing.
Important as well, you said you spoke to the ISKA guy because they were sanctioning the belts. The main event between Takaru and Bailey Sogden was for an ISKA championship. Say what you want, but they seem to have a championship for every type of stand-up fighting you could possibly find that involves feet and punches. So they may be important later as well. So obviously, next question is, how did it seem on the day? Because I've had ticket holders tell me that they were unaware that the Japanese fighters would be on hours before the start time. On the ticket, the time said 18:30 local time. The actual event started a lot earlier because they had to accommodate Japanese broadcaster ABEMA. Apparently, some people did receive an email from the event holder to say, "Actually, come earlier because the Japanese fights are going to start earlier." But from what we could tell, it seemed that there was hardly anybody in the arena when the fight started. So, is that correct?
Like for the start of the event, they talked about that on the Instagram a lot about the fact that the people should come early, but I don't even see a ticket myself, so I couldn't compare if what was written about it. I just assumed myself that the second part of the card was filled with French fighters fighting each other. A lot of upcomers, and so a lot of people were excited about that, and I think they really assumed that the first fights, maybe even though there was Japanese in there, because they don't know about them, maybe they just thought they would skip it. But also on Saturday, there are a lot of people that are still working actually, so I think a lot of people couldn't make it before
okay.
like before 8 probably, but it has to do with the fact that a lot of people were not aware that this was really like superstars coming in France. Like, we were not a lot that were aware of that, so I don't know. Probably I think they started to inform people about the fact that there basically were two cards. They started to inform people too late, probably in TGP, and they didn't do a good job about informing all people to come early. They should have done, I don't know, videos, something, maybe go all social medias everywhere, but I don't know what is that. And also in France, a lot of shows, they ask you to come at like 5 p.m. and the show really starts at 7. So people probably didn't trust the promotion about that, because most of people didn't knew that the show was broadcasted live on ABEMA TV. So probably it's trust issues, like for the most part.
Yeah, I mean,
but I would say that there were probably like 1,000 to 1,500 people.
Okay. Next question. I assume that the only Japanese people were the entourage with the fighters, or was there actually Japanese fans in attendance? I'm sure
I was surprised. Yeah, there were like probably 30, 40 uh-huh. max. Yes. But they were there, yeah, with flags and everything. And they were cheering about Takeru. And it seems like there was, the word was given by I don't know if this if it's the Japan embassy or for someone from the Japanese, you know,
from the expats,
you know, like
for residents,
exactly.
Yeah.
But it seems like they got the word about it that Takeru was fighting in France, so see, that's why they can. But well, yeah, probably 30 to 40 people.
This is not a very interesting question, and I know you weren't you were attending as press, but do you know what the ticket price was? Was it expensive or any idea?
Not really. Like the like lowest
50 euros or something?
No, the lowest was like 35 euros.
Okay.
Yeah, the lowest was 35, and the highest was probably, I don't know, but probably 100 euros, something like that.
So the atmosphere seems pretty good, but did, as you know, and you may have seen it online, I don't know if you were checking your phone during the event, if there was reception, but everyone realized there was something wrong during the show, watching it on the stream, because it was on ABEMA, a pay-per-view, I think, but also on Fight TV. So English-speaking viewers were watching. So I'm sure some people had a stream. I think we should support smaller promotions myself. I don't really understand streaming something when we're trying to, you know, support these promotions. But, you know, people realised there was a problem. But I'm going to talk about quickly the summary of how we fought on the day. And then I'm going to ask you what it seemed like in the arena. And then we're going to talk about what we know now. So on the day, it seemed that rounds were running really long. It seems that, and we're going to talk about the fights in a minute. The rounds were running really long. It seemed there was no communication between the timekeeper and the referee because there was no bow. I think we later found out that it was stuck in traffic, which is typical Paris. I'm sure you will agree. But it seems that the rounds were running for minutes longer. Did it seem like that in the arena, or did it? Or are you aware that during the referee breaks, the clock would stop? Is that something which is typical?
So yeah, about the rules, I know that when the ref says break, at the table of the officials, they stop the time. I know that because I fought in France and I'm a coach in France, so I know that. But people don't know about that. And usually the speaker says to the crowd that time stop or maybe something like that. They talk about that. So, but nobody talked about it. So like, people noticed about the bell immediately at the first amateur fight, the very first round. They were like, there's no bell. So you could hear the supervisor of the federation, the French Federation, yelling to Paul Nichols, time out. You know, so we were like, should be a problem. And about the time, I would say that the second round, I didn't keep the time for that fight, but the second round between the Tiger and Paul was long. It felt long for where I stood, actually. It seemed long. So I think people noticed. And for the bell, yeah. Well, that was crazy because as soon as I understood that there was no bell, I went to the promoter. And I went to the French Federation to tell them to, you know, ask them to use their mobile app instead and take the mic from the speaker and the mobile app so that everyone could be aware of the ring and everything. But as the French Federation is, they're very, you know, narrow-minded people. And they said no. They said no. They said that the bell is coming. It's stuck in traffic. But I know the traffic, the Saturday in Paris at that time of the day, it's a murder. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy traffic. So yeah, nobody was able to know when the bell was coming. And usually, the rules within the federation are like, if there's no bell, there's no fight.
Of course. But the Japanese, do we have exactly. Nobody stops for the Japanese?
Exactly. They were putting a lot of pressure so the fights go on. Actually, the Japanese were a bit mad that there was an amateur fight before the Japanese fight because it was very late in Japan, understand?
Yes.
So yeah, they believed that the first fight would be immediately Taiga. And there was like this amateur fight with pads and shin pads and all things on, and we were like, "Wow, this is crazy!" You know.
Like, well, as we know, in Japan, we have completely separate events.
Exactly.
The Koshien events or the, you know, the amateur events, we have completely separate events. So would have seemed strange for them, for sure. This is just different cultural things. I mean, it's crazy that you and I, we always speak about this stuff, but it's so great that when you see these cultures clash in kickboxing, it's great. It's really great because we want to see all these different cultures matching up with each other. And now we have this and it's like, oh, fuck, it's not going very well. It's like an awkward date or something, you know, the Japanese, like what's going on. But to explain to people at home that are not aware of the sort of idiosyncratic nature of Japan, the train company last year had to provide a public apology for a train that was 8 seconds early. A train is early. They have to bow and say sorry. So for a fight event to be stopped because of no bow and for a bow to be stuck in traffic, for the Japanese organizers, for the Japanese people that, you know, are arranged with the promoter, the handlers of Takaru, it is unthinkable. This would never happen. Everything would be on time. So you have this conflict straight away. And it's good to know that obviously you came up with a solution. It's very bad to know that it was not accepted by the French Commission. Just quickly, is it like Japan where the JBC, the Japanese Boxing Commission, also mediates on kickboxing, or does France have a separate commission for Muay Thai, kickboxing and Western boxing?
No, for the last 10 years or so, the French Boxing Federation is only boxing and always been boxing for like four decades or something like that. But for like 10 years or maybe a bit more, we've got a federation for Muay Thai, kickboxing, and karate and all of that. This is one federation. And but even though this version of the federation is like 10 years old, this is the same guys that were in the old Muay Thai federations. It's been the same guys for the last 30 years, probably.
So they should know better.
They know about that, but for the 30 years, they're still... This is the same... I'm sorry for my language, but this is the same decades for the, like, 30 years. You can't talk about... This is not... You can communicate with them. It's not possible.
You do have to apologize for language on my show, man. You can call everyone an FNC, dickhead, bullshit. I don't care, man. I'm just more surprised that you swore. But you don't have to apologize.
Because I was very pissed. I was pissed off because, you know, like MTGP is like, they're cool guys. They're cool guys and they're trying to do good stuff. And the French Federation fuck-ups gives a bad name to the MTGP.
Yes, also as well, you've got, and I said before, it's still a small audience, but you've got new eyes on the promotion, on the product, people that are paying for pay-per-view, as I say, whether they're streaming it, paying pay-per-view, whatever, fans that wouldn't normally watch this promotion, fans of J-Kick, which for listeners that just checked in for this one that don't normally listen to kickboxing episode is, you know, the fans online name for Japanese kickboxing, MTGP have a great opportunity. And people are going to come away watching this, going, oh, "I won't buy another one of their events. I'm not going to watch them again."
Absolutely, and that's why you can ask Lucas about that. The whole 3 days, I was trying to warn everyone from MTGP and from the federation. Listen to me. This is Japanese superstars. This is Japanese TV, and with all the customs of the Japanese. They're very professional. And right now, what we're showing is unprofessional. So we need to step up. We need to step up because this is a huge opportunity for MTGP to bring like good fighters, not only up-and-comers, but good fighters from everywhere to fight for them. So that's why I was really frustrated about that because, ask Lucas, because I sat down for more than 10 minutes the entire night. I was always up and running and trying to fix things because I wanted, you know, so to leave that France and the French promotions leave a good account of themselves. But I would say that the great mistake lies solely on the federation shoulders, but even though is a friend, and I told him about that. MTGP should have done better. Should have been, you know, I don't know how to say that, but they should have known better. Actually, I don't think they were aware of the magnitude of the fighters they brought to France.
Well, here's the thing as well. We're seeing recently with kickboxing is actually in a pretty good place. We're seeing more fighter sharing more than ever. K1 and Rise working together. We're seeing Rise and Infusion working together. You know, if this event went really well, with all these prospects, we're going to see invites. You send your fighters over to Japan, or you send your fighters to fight in Infusion. Exactly. We'll send fighters to you. It helps everyone, for everyone to work together. And we've got this amazing opportunity with names. When I heard, look, let's be honest, go back a little bit, right?
Yeah.
You would have known before most people. And I think actually I did hit you up and say, is this true? But when the rumors came out that Takeru was going to fight in Paris, we could not believe this. Like you say, to have a superstar, but also he is Japan's favorite son. For him to agree, obviously he had some fights in Thailand when he was younger, but to agree on the first fight of free agency to fight in France, this opened up a whole new world for the whole sport.
Yeah. Yeah. And fucked it up.
Yeah, you fucked it up. And here's the thing as well. One Championship seemed to be fucking it up as well, because he's pissed off. Absolutely. He's pissed off. We'll talk about that in a second. We're going to talk about two fights because and it's a running joke on the podcast that I'm making fun of Tiger, but also he had a very late notice. He had a late notice opponent, so not too much to talk about there. But what I want to talk about, two fights. One is a shocker for me, but it won't be for you. And we're going to talk about that one first. The young French kid, Alexis Sautron, knocking out Taiju Shiratori. We'll call him Taiju for the rest of the podcast. Yeah. Taiju, a fight I'm not always high on. He's a long punch picker, boxing first stylist, really. Comes from Muay Thai, but has boxed. Good body puncher, but gets involved too much. He's not that great defensively. He's quite upright. But still a big name, a well-known fighter. But you know about this kid, Alexis Sautron. We're going to talk about how the fight went in terms of the controversies with the round in a moment. It seemed on the day that the second round had overrun by over a minute. We now know that's not the case. But right on the bell, on the second round, steps in, jams a kick, switches stance, catches Taiju with a right hook from southpaw stance. He's an orthodox fighter generally, I believe, but I did see switch hitting during the fight. Jams the kick, steps forward, catches him, knocks Taiju out. Shocker, because of course the Japanese come over. We expect them, it's like an exhibition for them. What did you think? Did you obviously know this kid? You're going to tell us about his background. I think you've seen him train over the years, etc. Tell us about him. Were you shocked?
I won't say that I wasn't shocked, but I knew there was a strong possibility that Alexis either knocked him out or hurt him bad, because I knew he's a strong fighter who packs
Is he a big puncher? Is he a big puncher,
Not big puncher, but good puncher.
Okay.
A solid puncher. Solid fighter, all in all. And he's powerful because he's powerful. And to be completely honest, and maybe I will be disappointing to some Japanese J-Kick fans, but Alexis, I know Alexis because he's a young fighter from my area. So I seen him fight since he was like 10 years old, probably like that. And he was always a good, promising fighter. He had a rough year actually this year because he had one of two defeats, but still have great results. He went a few times to the IFMA championships. He won some medals over there. And he fought in Thailand a lot. He fought in Max Muay Thai. He fought and things like that. So he's young, but he's experienced. And the fact that outside of France, nobody knew him. Nobody knew him. And I knew it was at its advantage. And the last piece of advantage he got was probably from me again. Because, as you know, I know about J-Kick a lot. I know about Taiju. And I saw Alexis and I work for the same gym, actually, from day to day. We work in the same place. So we talked about it, and we talked about the fact that if he was in Taiju's face from the first round, and if he was able to learn something big, Taiju would be in doubt. It would be. And we knew the second thing, the most critical thing, is like when Tadju has a wonder of a left kick, a very good left kick. But the problem is when he kicks with his left kick, he doesn't bring his hand up after the kick. Always, always keep it down. And we told me and the coaches of Alexi, we told him the opportunity will be there. You would be able to land a punch, a good punch. To say that we expected him to fold Tadju like that, no, I didn't think. I probably yelled when it happened, but it was great. I knew he could do well, have the victory like by decision and things like that. For him to win by knockout is awesome, pretty awesome. Yeah.
It reminded me of the when Tadju represented Rise against Skonopar in the match last year. Similar thing, short right hook, southpaw stance, knocked him out, and that was in the first round. But of course, Skonopar, well known as a veteran and a big puncher, so it was very, very impressive. And Alexei's going to have great opportunities going forward, I have no doubt. I would not be surprised for him to be invited to Japan, because that was very impressive. And as I say, it happened on Japanese media as well. So have you had a chance to speak to him after the fight? Is he buzzing? Is he excited?
I was speaking to him like an hour ago, actually. And he was very excited. But the thing is, the funny thing is, if it wasn't for me or Luca, he really wasn't aware that he knocked out a great fighter. He knew he was a good fighter, but he didn't knew that he was that, like, a superstar in Japan. And he wasn't aware that knocking Tadju out would open him the gates of Japan, really, probably, most likely will fight in K1 or in Rise, or I don't know, but he should fight in Japan, probably. So I thought about him. I told him about that, and he was really excited. He's willing to rematch Tadju, actually, if Japan is going to have him. He would be very pleased to go to Japan and rematch Tadju for a belt or something like that. And he's really happy. He can't wait to see what that fight would bring to him.
Just quickly as well, did the Japanese say, we're bringing Tadju, have you got an opponent for him? And they just picked this kid? Or did they say, oh, we want an easy fight? Or did they say, you know, did they ask for an opponent? Or did it just get, was it natural matchup?
No, they really trust the MTGP for the matchup, actually. They said, bring a fighter. Any fighter. Bring a fighter, a good fighter. We want to make a good fight. And a lot of French fighters were eager to get that fight. And actually, when it was announced that it was Alexi that got that fight, a lot of people in France were like, he's not deserving of the matchup.
Oh, wow.
They would say, like, maybe he's not at that level because he lost his fight like a month ago, you know, and he was stopped a month like, a little 2 months ago, actually. He was stopped 2 months ago because he received some some shots to ground, and he was forced to quit. But a lot of people like thought it would probably be Elias Mahmoudi who fought a lot in one. Yeah. And it was a bit it was a bit of an upset that Alexi landed the fight, but the promoter was very confident that he would do a great fight against Tadju.
And it's a shame, isn't it? Because it's a shame because the matchup's paid off, but of course all the stuff surrounding it has not. Yeah. And it does turn out, I think that maybe that round was maybe 10, 20 seconds too long, but it wasn't minutes. Because a lot of people were saying, oh, Tadju, he wouldn't have got knocked out so brutally if the timekeeper. Okay, maybe that's the case. But overall, the fighters, and as you notice, you're not really always aware of the time.
Yeah.
Tadju's not like, oh, fuck, come on, man. They got 20 seconds here. Yeah. They're fighting. They'll stop when they're told to stop. So, you know.
Actually, right. They were both fighting. I, for a fact, because I spoke to the both of them, and I was surprised Tadju's understand of English, because obviously I don't speak Japanese. But I spoke to him a little bit. I spoke to Alexis. Both didn't knew about the time that were a bit longer.
Okay.
And Tadju actually was very classy about the loss and very, you know, he was very aware that he was losing the fight. Like, he was still actually, what he said is like, he was still rattled from the first round.
Yeah, of course, those aren't aware, he was knocked down in the first round as well. Yeah. Really competitive fight, though, throughout. It was not one-sided. Really enough, Taiju punching into the knees and, as I say, really aggressive body punching, tried to walk Alexei down.
He hurt Alexei to the body. Alexei told me that he was very badly hurt to the body, actually.
Well, talking about being very badly hurt to the body, the main event, Takaru versus Bailey Sugden. Bailey came out strong, but as we know, Takaru is always a bit of a slow starter. You can hit him early, but once he gets the calf to kick down and starts walking you down, once you decide to engage with him, once you decide to exchange with him, the fight is over. And I think once you decide to, there's a huge difference between lateral movement, defensive movement, and conceding ground. And once you concede ground against Takaru, you're fucked. It's over. Once he starts walking you down, it's over. And maybe from the end of round one or maybe middle of round two onwards, once the knockdown started, Takaru was walking Bailey Sugden down and he was terrifying. I spoke to your co-host, Luca Bordon, and he said that in person, Takaru's body punches were one of the two hardest he'd ever heard. Is that what it felt like?
The only man I saw in person hitting harder to the body is Tyrone Spong.
For those not aware, a heavyweight, heavyweight, long-time K1 kickboxer.
But it felt the exact same. It's terrifying. But the most terrifying thing is not, to me, it's not the body punching, it's the way he puts the pressure on the fighter. In person, you get under the impression that he's going to put pressure on you, actually, because he's that close to the ring and he puts the pressure nonstop. And because you're able to feel the impact of the blows, really makes you think. Everyone says this on Twitter about a lot of fighters, makes you think how good tension is. This is what I thought to myself. This is what I taught myself, because to be able to sustain that kind of pressure, you must be like not just good, you have to be crazy good. You have to be above elite. This is my take on this. It is really, really impressive. And I was thinking also, what was it like to witness like a fight of Takaru, but I don't know, 5 years. 5 years younger.
But I'll tell you what, he still looked in great condition. He's, for those that are not aware, he hasn't fought since the match. He's been very sporadic in his fighting anyway. This is his third fight in 3 years. He fought Leona Pettis, obviously, then Tenshin last year, and then this one. But he looked in great condition. He had the famous gladiator shorts. He looked really, really good. He still looks so durable. He's still strong. Yeah. He is just, you cannot stop this guy, which is crazy because, as you say, Tenshin running him onto that left hand in the first round of their fight, dropping him. However, we saw 5 rounds in this. Again, we thought that maybe it would run long. In the end, Takaru prevailing by brutal, brutal head kick knockout. I bet that sounded crazy in close. I mean, obviously, you've seen a lot of fights over the years, but my God, that one sounded like it cracked. I think people are going to think now, what if the Tenshin fight was 5 rounds? And I think it's a shame. Because he's still got that 5-round engine. I mean, actually, over the years, Takaru has never really fought 5 rounds because in K1, it's not 5 rounds. Actually, Tenshin has fought more 5-round fights, but everyone wanted to see that fight be 5 rounds. It was felt that it would favour Takaru. And actually, probably, now he does look strong over 5 rounds.
Absolutely. I think so, yeah. Absolutely. He was stronger. He was getting stronger as the fight progressed.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What was really interesting about the fight is that, you know, the, as everyone knows, if you attack the body, the head will fall. But Bailey Sugden, from maybe round two or three onwards, he was really reliant on head movement because his hands, or we talk about the body punching, his hands were so low. He was so wary in them body punches. He was almost doubled over in pain. Like, do you think that maybe the corner should have stopped it sooner? What would you have done? You're a man. You're a coach.
Definitely. I was actually, I was right behind the English corner. So I was waiting, but the first thing I noticed that is that there wasn't really a towel to be thrown at. So, but they never considered it. Never.
Just quickly as well, I'm not criticizing the corner, but at the beginning of the third round, he'd already been hurt. There was a part when Takaru was following him, and I heard the corner man shout, "He's not doing anything." Yeah. I mean, yeah, he is. He's being fucking scary. He's walking you down. You have to fight fire for fire with Takaru, but you've got to be smart. We said about tension, yeah? You've got to pick your shots, pick your moments well. You can be crazy like Leona Pettis and fight fire and maybe win. But Bailey Sugden's not that kind of fighter. He was good in glory. He wins some, lose some. He's a good British fighter. I think he's a good operator. But Leona Pettis is a dangerous fighter. He is so focused. He's an elite level fighter, yeah? If you're going to fight Takaru, fucking, you know, and go at him like that, you've got to be elite. You can't do it. And if you're going to get away from him, you've got to be smart. And Bailey Sugden, he just ran out of ideas quickly. He kind of threw the kitchen sink at Takaru. And as we know, he must have thought, oh, I'm doing quite well here. Like a lot of fighters do. You get confidence against Takaru early. And then as soon as he hits you back, it's a whole different world. And like you said, like the power in person, if it seemed that big, then it's really harsh to say, but there's levels to this. There's levels.
Yeah. There is levels to this. At the presser, I asked Bailey about the fight and about the fact that everyone was expecting him to lose, and maybe must not be a good feeling. But I was pretty sure he was planning on the upsetting Takaru, and the answer was quite interesting because he talked about the fact that it was a Takaru party in social medias, and he was willing to ruin the party. So probably Diego was probably involved, but after the third round, it was really obvious that Takaru was walking him down and was finding his shots, and he was hurting him very bad to the body. And as you said, even though Bailey was protecting his body as much as he could, he was taking tremendous blows to the body, and he was hurt. He was visibly hurt. But the only thing corner was shouting is toughen up, and he's not doing anything, and you're winning the fight because you're ducking most of the head punches. So I myself as a coach would have stopped it in the fourth round, but maybe if Bailey's corner listened to the podcast, they would say I'm a bitch, probably. I don't know, but this is the way I protect my fighters, and it was very obvious in the fourth that Bailey was hurt to the body. He was hurt to one of his arm, of his shoulder, something like that. He was in pain. He was in great pain. It was, and he was able to defend himself with his right arm.
And he couldn't hurt his opponent. And he couldn't hurt his opponent. So why is he in there?
And he got knocked out because he wasn't able to raise his right arm. He couldn't raise it anymore. And that's why he got knocked out. So, and Takeru is not the fighter to, you know, slow down in the fifth. Like, my fight is won. And I don't want to hurt you. And we're exchange.
He's a killer. No, he's a killer.
He's going to kill you if he can. And he tried to kill him every minute of the fight. And finally, you know, he got the knockout. So, yeah, that was everyone in the crowd. Not everyone, like I wasn't listening to everyone, but most of the people around me were questioning, were asking why you have to throw the troll. You have to throw it. You have to stop that fight. And also, Paul Nichols, he should have, you know,
the referee. At what point I was the referee? Yeah.
At what point I asked myself if he was allowed to do a standing head count, because he wasn't going to do that, and I didn't understand why. Because at one point in the third or maybe the fourth round, like Bailey took maybe 10, 12 punches. Unanswered. And still no count. So I don't know. I don't understand. It was a bit weird because, yeah, they should have done better, I think, the ref and the corner.
Bailey was really brave. You've got to give him that. I know Luca always says, if you say someone's brave, that means they didn't do anything else. But that's not true. He did try. He tried to walk Takeru down early. And as I say, I'm sure he's aware of him as a fighter. I'm sure he'd done his research. But we've seen lots of fighters in the past have early success and think, oh, I'm doing well here. It's just a bit of a slow start. It takes maybe 30 seconds, minute to get warmed up, Takeru. He finds his range and then he feels comfortable enough to start trading with you. But, you know, I don't think Bailey Sugden should feel hard done by. He was taking on a much more respected fighter and he took his beating well. And, you know, he tried. He did try. And a lot of fighters, we've seen a lot of fighters fight Takeru and fold under that pressure. So, and it actually, he fought nearly five rounds of him. So big respect for that. Yeah. I don't want to, but I wouldn't last 5 seconds in there with Takeru. So a guy lasts five rounds, absolutely. Fair play.
So this is absolutely no disrespect to the baby. He's a warrior, actually. And they did great. He had a great first round, a very good second round. But then the superior fighter took command and there was no way Bailey would knock him out with one punch or something like that. So yeah, but credit to him because he was great. And also huge credit to Paul, who fought Tiger, because he fought Tiger on 2 days' notice. And I was there when they asked him to fight. So they asked him to fight at the presser. So yeah, huge credit to Paul. Very nice guy.
Yeah. I don't think the fight's worth too much analysis, but yeah, absolutely. To take that fight on late notice against Tiger, who's a well-known fighter and has fought everyone.
Yeah.
You know, respect for that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Talking about Takeru, we talk about, you know, what he seemed like in person. You've seen so many great fighters in person. You mentioned Tyron Spong earlier. I know you see Sam Kaur. I know you've seen loads of great Thai fighters. Did you fight in Thailand too? You fought in Thailand, didn't you? Yeah. They ripped you off. Yeah, yeah. No, they do every Phalang. They ripped you off. They pay you some beer to fight. You don't even drink. Brilliant. You fought in Japan as well?
No, not in Japan.
No, Japan. I fought in Thailand, yeah. So you've seen a lot of great fighters. Maybe you can tell us some more, but tell me, where does Takeru rank in terms of the best, not the greatest, but you know, the best fighters you've seen up close? How many would you put above him in terms of the quality that you saw?
That's a very hard one, guy.
I know, that's why I throw it at you. I know you want to. We get to talk about loads of different fighters now. Now you get to real fighters, and we get to go, yeah, man, yeah, yeah.
I'd have to sleep on it, but like right now, I would say is easily top 15 and probably top 10. Most likely top 10, yes.
And who's the number one? Who's the number one? You must know who's the best you've seen in person.
The best I've seen, obviously, was my former coach, Danny Bill.
Oh, of course, Danny Bill, of course.
Yeah, it's the best also. But outside of Danny, because, I'm very biased about
Danny. No, you're not. Just quickly, you're not biased. Everyone knows Danny. But if you see Danny Bill on TV, on YouTube, you know that you cannot fail to be amazed. A magician.
Yeah, I know. He's very great. But outside of him, probably the best would be Namsak Noi.
Namsak Noi, yeah, another great choice as well.
Yeah,
another great choice.
I saw Senchai, but no, I'm biased actually because I'm a fan of Namsak Noi. Senchai obviously is, like a great fighter. But yeah, it's a very interesting question because there isn't a lot of fighters that really impressed me like that. Like every fighter at that level is very good. Even those who lose, they're all very good. They're all, like we discussed it in your podcast earlier, but I said that when I saw Andy Sauer fight, I wasn't a fan before, but when I saw him fight, I became a fan because he was so good. And Takeru, I was a fan. I'm a huge fan of Takeru. And he is one of the guys that impressed me the most. You saw that, you see him fight on TV and you know he's crazy, a crazy pressure fighter who can take a punch. But when you see that in live and you see the guy, you stand behind before him and everything like that, is very, very good. Yeah, it's probably top 10. Yeah,
that's good. I'm sorry to put you on the spot there, but that's a good one, right? That's a good question. Right? We've got to talk about the greats. So how about one championship then? We mentioned earlier Takeru, you know, he seems pissed off already because even though Chappi Sichodong, the head of one, is apparently half Japanese, he doesn't seem to understand how Japanese customs work. He decides to sign one of the biggest fighters in striking and talk about how he's never fought anybody. You know, he's not going to be a real top fighter till he comes to one. Well, Takeru is a company man who is devastated to have to leave K1. He loves K1. Yeah. He has spent his whole career trying to put K1 on the map. He is such a proud Japanese fighter who loves kickboxing, loves K1. Because, of course, differentiation. In Japan, K1 is K1. It's, well, we call it kickboxing, but they call Muay Thai kickboxing. So K1 is K1, right? So he loves it. Great way to annoy your new signing is to say that, oh, it's not that good over there. So he's already pissed off. And of course, Takeru signed because he was promised to fight with Rod Tang. I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast knows who Rod Tang is. For me and you, it's crazy because he is like a crossover fighter now. More people talk about Rod Tang than I would say any fighter outside of boxing and UFC. I think Rod Tang gets spoken about more than any other fighter. Easy. The biggest name outside of UFC and boxing. Easy.
Yeah.
So it's crazy for me and you to see that, a TIE fight like that. But that's what Takeru was promised. That's what he wants to do. If I can't make K1 that big, if I can't beat Tenshin, let me beat the best striker outside of Japan. Yeah. Let me get some pride back. I want that fight. And Rod Tang is now on social media saying, yeah, Takeru's got to beat some people before I fight him. Where do you stand on this Rod Tang argument that's going on with all the Muay Thai connoisseurs right now, which is, Rod Tang doesn't want to fight any of the top ties. He's happy just to fight easier fights. He's happy to fight Farang. And do you think that he put in Takeru in that same bracket of, that's too much, I don't need to fight, I'm a big star, why do I need to fight these people?
This is very disappointing for Rod Tang. He was already disappointing for like 1 year or two because he's obviously the King Super League and all Thai fighters. But I mean, I could understand where he was coming from about fighting Super League, about fighting Pan Payak and all those Thai fighters, because like, yeah, we're all Thais and all the stuff about that. Okay, no problem. But you called that Takeru when he wasn't available. When you knew he wasn't available, you called him out because you fought Tenshin, had a great fight with Tenshin, fantastic. You called out Takeru. Takeru probably like kept his name on his radar for years before he was able to. Like you said, as soon as he was a free agent, he pursued the fight with Rod Tang. And now the fight is like the only thing logical that you can do for both guys next fight. You're like, no, you need to get some wins first. Like, is any random kickboxer around here? This is very disappointing. And I sincerely hope that Chatterjee don't fuck this up, because Takeru has to be the kind of guy who says, if I'm not fighting your best guy, I'm not fighting at all.
Takeru, and he's so influential to do that. He's so influential. He'd go back to Japan and tell all Japanese fighters, don't sign there.
Exactly. Exactly. And if it goes like that, it'd probably be a huge blow for ONE Championship and in his relationship with Japan. So I think they will fix this. I hope Roteng will come to his senses and realize this is the only fan that counts. Yeah, he's big. He's a big star right now. He's only fighting Farengs. He's only fighting newcomers in ONE. He's been doing that for like the last 5-6 fights. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I would say he had a great year, 2 years so. But now this is the great challenge everyone wants to see. This is the only logical challenge for him. And he needs to do that. He needs to do that. And everything other than Takeru versus Roteng as the next fight would be disappointing for us. And I think it would be devastating for ONE, probably.
And to play devil's advocate, although I completely agree with you, every single word. These ties, they fight each other. Like, I know what you said a minute ago about the ties not fight each other. They fight each other from being kids.
Yeah.
They fight their whole lives to get an opportunity like this to make money, which they never get. And now they've got it. Yeah. And I get Rod Tang saying, you know what? We don't need to fight each other now because we've done this a whole... Now we're on the big stage. Let's showcase our skills against the foreign fighters, yeah? The problem is the other ties are going, nah. We're not got your money. Give me a chance. And what he's saying is, nah, fuck you. He's forgot where he's from. Where he's from, in the stadiums, they fight each other 7 times.
Yeah.
They fight to prove who the best is. Now he's got the casual fans saying he's the best. He's like, my work is done. I'm a star. I understand to an extent, but he's treating, and I've got a theory for you in a second. I'm going to share. I keep sharing this. I'm going to annoy people with this, but I've got a little thing.
Yeah.
But he is treating Muay Thai like Floyd Mayweather treat boxing. That's not what Muay Thai is about. We've shielded these sports, kickboxing and Muay Thai, because the big money's never been there. We've shielded them from what is so wrong about boxing for years, picking and choosing fights. And now Rod Tang has the first star in years. Look, Burkow was a star, and he was as big a star as Rod Tang. He never did this. He never did this. He actually fought everyone.
Actually, and we talked about it on your podcast. He fought a young fighter who everyone didn't want to fight, and everyone knew was going to be great. He fought Petrosian when he wasn't...
There was nothing to gain.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, this is... I don't understand why Warren Tang is like that. But I understand what you're saying. Like, casual fans are calling him the GOAT.
Oh, mate, don't. It makes me feel sick.
I saw that quite a bit that said that this Rod Tang is the best Muay Thai fighter ever.
You see, like yesterday, Rod Tang is number one and Nong O is the second greatest of all time. Love both guys. Love Nong O. Love him.
Yeah.
I've done for years. Saw him in person. Awesome. Talk about best fighters I've seen. I saw him in his prime in 2013 and that card was so stacked. I barely even remember watching him fight. You know what I mean? Like, he was maybe the fourth or fifth best fighter on that card.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And he was already great. That's how stacked Muay Thai was. But again, everyone was fighting everyone, yeah? But this is the thing. You've got these new fans, and it's a really interesting debate because we've got the debate at the moment with the Muay Thai fans online because, and this is the little theory I'm going to bring up, they don't like the fact that ONE's version of Muay Thai does not necessarily favour the Thais. I don't agree with that. But I do agree with the rule set. It's not the small gloves. It's the lack of clinching. They don't want clinching.
Absolutely.
They don't want, which is fine. So I don't think they should call it 4-ounce Muay Thai. I think they should just call it striking. It should be the World Striking Championship. Yeah. It's easy. People know the word striking from MMA now. And essentially, that's what it is. It's like MMA striking because you're not having to clinch so much. It's the best strikers, but in 4-ounce gloves, it's more of an MMA rule set. It's kind of, it's determined on aggression. They want knockouts, they want crazy fights. The Muay Thai fans are annoyed because they're saying, like, well, that means my favorite clinch fighter or my female fighter would not be the best at ONE. But it's basically like a different sport, really. It's like a different sport. And we need a little bit of adjustments. But the problem is, as well, it's great for the fighters. It's great for us, the fans, to get to see these crazy, violent fights. It's great that it's brought in a casual audience. But as we know from being online for years, 75% of the casual audience is the dumbest person you've ever met. We've got fans now that have been into Muay Thai for 6 months that want to tell me and you who the greats are. And yet me and you would agree, and anyone who's into Muay Thai, we discover new greats all the time because there's so many. There's so many great fighters in history.
Yeah.
There are some that we watch a footage. Oh, my God, who's this guy? Oh, my God, he beat 10 fighters that I've heard of. And I only heard about him yesterday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's such a deep sport that even the big fans don't know everyone. And yet we've got these kids coming in telling us Rod Tang is the greatest of all time. It makes no sense.
Not at all, but it's been, you know, you've been online for as long as I've been, and it's always been like that, unfortunately, and always will be like that. So I don't even follow MMA that close, but this is what mainstream brings to the table. But
exactly.
I don't really mind. I let them do their education and then see their tweets like 4 or 5 years. I saw some on Twitter, like talking. They're much better educated about the sport that when they began, and there was like very negative about the fighters. But this is the problem with Rod Tang, is that I think for myself, this is what lets him be comfortable with saying something like, I won't fight Takeru directly. And he really needs to come to his senses. The only thing we can all hope is that Chatri don't support that. I hope he grabbed his phone, talked to Rod Tang, and told him to get ready to fight Takeru and no one else. This is what I hope. This is what we can only hope, everyone. And if this is not happening, then I can really see Takeru says, all right, I'm not fighting for one. Thank you so much. And see you later. One thing that's very important to add is that one is actually right now involved in a lot of contract disputes with fighters. Like Sami Sana was supposed to fight in the MTGP show, but one prevented him. Anissa Mexen was supposed to fight in MMA in France, but problem with the contract. Jimmy Viano also, and other fighters. So Chatri seems very content to go to war, to contract wars with fighters. I hope, sincerely hope, this is not the case with Takeru.
Wow, there's the Abima part of the situation, which is we are running your shows. We will kill this contract. We will not pay you. We will not renew the contract. Good luck finding another Japanese broadcaster, because they're the only Japanese broadcaster that are showing outside of boxing on Fuji that are showing combat sports. And it's the second biggest media market in the world. If Chatri is that stupid, and I'm not actually saying that he's not, he might actually be that stupid with some of his comments. Good luck. Some of the French guys, I feel bad for them, but they don't have what Takeru has, which is backing. You know, he's getting paid nearly the best part of $1 million per fight by Abima, not one.
Yeah,
by them. Yeah. So, I hope the fight happens. It'd be interesting, of course, because I think we'd love to see Takeru in 4 ounce gloves throwing elbows. It'd be fantastic. But also at the same time, they've got kickboxing in one as well. We can maybe see one fight per rule set. We can see these guys fight twice. I just hope, to take it back to our last podcast, we don't have another situation like the match where this goes on and on and on. These guys are obviously Rod Tang is old for a Muay Thai fighter, but Takeru now in his 30s, he cannot be fucking around. Let's make the fight, let's see it happen, and may the best man win.
Yeah, totally agree. And I don't think Takeru has in him to do the same thing as the match and asking.
Yeah, not again.
No.
He wants to have a fight. The guy wants to fight. Isn't it refreshing for a guy that's had, again, the opposite of Rod Tang? He's had the big fights, and now he's like, nah, okay, I'll relax. Takeru always is on the hunt, wants to hurt someone. He's a very easy fighter to love. fan favorite for sure. And I'm so happy for you. You got to see him in person. And obviously, I'm really happy that you got to share that on this podcast. Is there any other little stories or anything you want to tell before you go from the show? Anything you think might be interesting, or have we covered everything?
No, we've covered everything. It was great. The Japanese crew was very cool. I got to see Yasuhiro Kido, who I've got as my nemesis from Twitter for a few years. I told him so. And he was, we laughed about it. I told him about it. So it was very funny. And all of them were very kind. And it was great. It's too bad that big mistakes were made by the French Federation again. It need to be said, and it should have been better. And the MTGP should have known better about doing everything they could to prevent from the fuck ups that occurred. They should have done better. I told Eric about this, and I will talk about this. But if they ever have the opportunity to bring Japanese fighters or big fighters again, he will give me a call sooner. And we work together so they don't make the same mistakes again.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that, you know, for the fans of the sport, that we be able to give them the true story. Obviously, you covered it in French on the podcast. And for you guys to reach out, obviously, we talk all the time, but for you guys to reach out and say, look, let's tell the story in English for everyone else. Now we can get rid of all the rumors, all the half-truths. Now everybody knows the true story of what really went on this past weekend. Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you, brother, as always.
It's always been you. Always. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And always, Kyle. It's always good. And we always said that we want you to host a podcast in English between Lucas and us. So it's always great to talk with you.
Well, we'll do it again soon. We'll make sure we get, next time there's a fight we want to talk about, or we'll pick one of these Lumpini cards, or we'll pick our next big one card for sure. Takaru versus Rod Sang, when that hopefully happens, we'll have all the boys on again. So let's do it more regularly, man.
Yeah, no problem.
Take it easy, brother. I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you. See you.
Bloody brilliant, isn't he? There was Bubba. You can follow him on Twitter at Bubba Smears. BABASMIRS. And if you want to follow the guy that we spoke about a million times on the podcast, our good friend Luca, he's Luca _ Bourdon. LUCAS, Lucas _ BOURDON. If you've listened to this podcast, I assume that you're already a fan of kickboxing and Muay Thai. You probably know who Takaru is. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll have heard me speak about him loads, retweet other people speaking about him loads. If you're not, I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you want to get more into kickboxing and Muay Thai, definitely follow those two accounts I just said. Way more knowledgeable than I am about it. Obviously a fan of the sport for years, but those boys really are the gurus, in my opinion. And I think you could just learn so much from them. There's great accounts as well. Great content on the regular. As you can tell, you know, Bubba, such a chill, smooth guy. And Luca, he's a bit more like me. He'll tell you to fuck off if he don't agree with you. So, you know, just perfect. You know, basically, you know, they're both halves of the French coin. You know, the I don't give a fuck style and the smooth, cool French. So give those boys a follow. Hopefully you enjoy this episode. I just think that it warranted speaking about more. Obviously, I did cover it in episode 50, but it really did need someone on the ground to give us the truth. And hopefully, with the reporting, Beyond Kickboxing did some excellent reporting and covered up the inaccuracies that they'd heard with some excellent on-the-ground reporting with the referee, who Bubba also mentioned in this podcast. Their reporting, along with this episode, should give everyone the full story, at least in the English language world, on what went down at Muay Thai Grand Prix this past weekend. And indeed, let's hope that Takaru versus Rod Sang happens sooner rather than later. Fucking, we can do it next month. Let's get that on. Let's get the boys back in to talk about it. Until then, though, there's plenty of fights coming up over the next month. A mixed bag and UFC card. We'll cover what we can, but, you know, all systems go for some extra stuff on the Patreon coming in next week. And I've got some excellent guests that I've already recorded for the episode. It's an audio documentary episode. Coming soon, only on the Combat Chronicles Patreon, www.patreon.com/combatchronicles. The content of that episode will not be revealed until the episode drops, and it's dropping in the next week to commemorate a very special anniversary. All I can tell you is the guests are great, the talking heads are great, and the fight itself is one of the greatest moments in mixed martial arts history. So until then, follow me here, follow me on Twitter at CombatCR. Tell your friends, let's get the word out there and let's get people watching more fights. That's what we love, right? So until next time, thanks for listening. Peace out.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.